good morning. You're listening to Short Stories with Mrs. Sam, brought to you by the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. Tune in every week on Sunday at 8:30 a.m. to WHDD 91.9 FM to catch our show. My name is Mrs. Sam. I'm the children's librarian at Hotchkiss Library of Sharon. We have all sorts of wonderful books there for children of all ages, and lovely crafting and story times besides. The weather is warm enough for us to have outside library programs. The library is about to undergo renovations, so you can find us at the American Legion at 15 New Street in Sharon, Connecticut. You can find information on all the events we hold for children and adults alike on our website, HotchkissLibraryOfSharon.org, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/HotchkissLibrary. We are open for browsing and borrowing and computer use every day of the week. Today, we're going to read a short story from Been There, Done That. This is a collection of stories published by Penguin Random House, and they have generously given us permission to read them to you over the radio. You will first hear the author's explanation of what inspired the story, and then the story itself. Today's selection is The Honorable Mention by Linda Sue Park. What Really Happened? The Voice by Linda Sue Park. In 7th grade English class at O.W. Huth Junior High School, Mrs. Gregerson called on Barry to read aloud. Barry had red hair and glasses and very pale skin and sat 3 seats behind me. Like a lot of other boys that year, his voice was changing, but nobody else's was changing as dramatically as Barry's was. I sat in my seat listening to him read. In the middle of page 42 of The Pearl, Barry's voice cracked and broke and skidded with a startling high-pitched squeak that made the whole class laugh, including Mrs. Gregerson. And Barry laughed, too. I turned around to see that even though those pale cheeks of his were turning raspberry red, he was laughing right along with the rest of us. From then on, whenever Mrs. Gregerson wanted something read aloud, she almost always asked Barry. All year long, through The Pearl and A Separate Piece and Lord of the Flies, we knew that a couple times a week we'd get to have a really good laugh in class. The end-of-the-year tradition for 7th graders at O.W. Huth was a trip to the state capitol. I could hardly wait. Janet and Dawn and I talked about it for weeks, planning what to bring and discussing, gleefully, what it would be like to spend a weekend in a nice hotel with only a few helpless chaperones trying to control the whole 7th grade. It took forever to get there, but at least we got to ride on real coaches, not school buses. The hotel was very cool, a fancy lobby, balconies, a game room, and a big indoor pool. On the first day, we toured some of the important sites in the Capitol. At least, that's what we were supposed to be doing. Mostly, we whispered and giggled and stood near, but not too near, the boys we thought were cute. The tour wasn't the fun part. All of us knew the real fun would happen later that evening, the pool pizza party. Back at the hotel, we changed into our bathing suits and spent ages trying to decide how to wrap our towels around our waists. Then we took the elevator down to the lobby. I caught a glimpse of Barry in his swim trunks. His bare chest was unbelievably pale. I figured that only an albino could possibly be whiter. The pool was so crowded that I could hardly see any of the blue of the water. It was packed with kids waving their arms, screaming at their friends, bobbing up and down because there certainly wasn't any room to swim. The noise was incredible. The sound of hundreds of yelling kids seemed to be multiplied exponentially by the tiled walls. Janet and Dawn and I didn't even have to say anything to one another. We left the pool area without a backward glance. Outside on the patio, we got our pizza. As we were eating, kids began streaming out of the pool. Everyone all at once, it seemed. It was complete chaos. Kids milling around, chaperones yelling, hotel employees dashing about in panic. It was a few hours before we found out what had happened. Barry had drowned in the pool. I had never known anyone my age who had died before, and at first I couldn't believe it. Our trip was cut short. We got back on the coaches to go home that night. Throughout the whole ride, I kept replaying the evening in my mind. I was almost positive that I had seen Barry out on the patio while we were eating pizza, so there must have been some mistake. I was wrong. There was no mistake. Barry was dead, and I would never again hear his voice behind me in English class. But I would hear it in my head at odd moments, in the locker corridor at school, in bed when I was half asleep, other places, other times, always when I wasn't expecting it. Even now, more than 40 years later, I sometimes still hear it. So that was Linda Sue Park's inspiration for this story that she wrote, called The Honorable Mention. Immaculate white pants with knife edge creases. Crisp navy blue shirt, bright red tie. His red hair shining, combed, perfect. Glasses framing his eyes, making him look so distinguished. He looked awesome, from a distance. Closer up, though, I noticed a couple things that really weirded me out. We'd won the regional, so the O.W. Smith Junior High School chorus was getting ready for state. The all-state select chorus competition. 30 of us, 18 girls, 12 boys, would be heading down to Springfield, our state capital, to sing against a bunch of other schools. The chorus qualifying for state was practically the biggest thing that had ever happened at Smith. 3 songs. We practiced them a million times each. My favorite was the one from Greece. I could hear Larry Harris singing his part, tenor, and I tried to sing mine, alto, just as well, maybe even a little better, which wasn't easy because Larry Harris had a voice like an angel. Okay, I didn't know that for a fact because I'd never heard an angel sing, and even people who have, like in the Bible, don't do a very good job of describing it. They don't say if all angels sing soprano or what kind of music they sing or if there are solo parts, and it's always a heavenly host, so any harpists would get drowned out for sure. But if I ever did hear an angel sing, I thought they'd make the kind of music that you could listen to for hours and hours, forever and ever, and never get tired of. So when it stops, you'd feel like crying out loud, "No, keep going, please!" And that was what it felt like when I heard Larry sing. In chorus, Larry stood just behind me and a little to my right, so I got to have his awesome voice right in my ear. I told my best friend, Janice, that being able to hear him so easily made me sing better, and right away she asked, "Do you like him?" I said, "No, I like his voice, that's all." Janice is my best friend, my soulmate, my twin. But it seems like every time I mention a boy's name, she wants to know if I like him, and sometimes it gets boring. Even though he had a great voice, Larry never tried out for a solo. Other people said it was because he was kind of, well, odd-looking. Red hair, freckles, glasses, the kind with thick black rims. But I knew the real person, even though we'd never talked about it. I could feel it when we were singing. Larry tried to blend his voice with everyone else's, and I tried to do the same. I loved the sound of a whole bunch of people singing together, how all those mouths and voices singing all those different notes could merge together like silk, with no single voice sticking out. It was a much bigger feeling than someone singing alone, no matter how good they were. The kids who were obsessed with getting solo parts didn't understand that. People were always telling me that I should try for a solo too, but I thought singing in a group was much more fun, especially if you were standing really close to Angel Voice Boy. In select chorus, it didn't matter if you were fat and black like Sandra, or fat and white like Beth, or had bad skin like Corey, or needed special help in reading like Jason, or were custodied jointly like a lot of kids, or got free lunch, which we weren't supposed to know who, but we did, Ashton, Kendall, Hannah, or were short and flat-chested and unathletic and Asian and liked reading more than hanging out most of the time, like me. Only 2 things mattered. You could sing, and you loved to sing. Still, it wasn't always easy to get 30 people to sing the right notes at the right time with the right kind of feeling. Mr. Scott, our chorus teacher, said it was like trying to put a straitjacket on an octopus. You got 4 of the arms tied up neatly, but then the 5th clamped its suckers on a rock and couldn't be budged, while 6, 7, and 8 jerked around wildly doing any old thing. We weren't wahooing right. We were supposed to hold the hoo for 2 counts and then cut it off quickly with a yeah, as close to a shout as we could while still singing, "Wahoo, yeah!" Mr. Scott kept his hands open during the hoo and then snapped them shut into fists on the yeah, like he was trying to grab the octopus. But it was no use, no matter how many times we tried it. Sometimes the sopranos were fine, but the altos messed up. And the next time the tenors and mezzos were good, but the sopranos were off, and the poor basses, they were that 5th arm clamped ferociously on the wrong beat every time. Finally, Mr. Scott stopped conducting and turned away from us, rubbing his head like he was in an aspirin commercial, and Mrs. Rizzo stopped playing the piano, so the quiet was very loud. Mr. Scott paced in front of us for a while, then stopped, took a deep breath, and said, "Everyone close your eyes." Some kids started to giggle, but we all closed our eyes. At least, I think everyone did, but I couldn't see. And then he said, "Picture a big, sharp knife, a meat cleaver. It comes down hard like a karate chop. Wham! Right when my hands close. Can you see it?" He continued, "That knife is the yeah, and it's cutting off the who. Get it? Everybody see it? Okay, let's go." We opened our eyes to see him nod at Mrs. Rizzo. The piano gave us a 4-bar lead, and here we go again. Wahoo! And this time, we all chopped down hard right when his hands closed, and every last one of us was dead on. Yeah! The bus trip to Springfield was like a miniature version of the cafeteria on wheels. The popular kids sat in one clot, with Suzanne bossing everyone around, the black kids in another clot, with Sandra as their queen, and the rest of us scattered around in twos and threes. Janice and I were a tiny clot in our wide, cushy seats that reclined, a little anyway, a giant window to the left, a TV for videos overhead. We had potato chips and power drinks, books and CDs, chocolate, and most important of all for a trip like this, pillows. The first couple hours were noisy, kids shouting and throwing stuff across the aisles, but then we settled down to read or listen to music or look out the window at mile after mile after mile of greenness. So vast and flat and never-endingly numbing that after a while I started to feel almost proud of it. Who needed scenic old mountains when you could look at a gazillion fields of high-yield corn? As we got closer to Springfield, good old Abe Lincoln started turning up everywhere. The Lincoln Diner, Honest Abe's Hardware, Lincoln Funeral Home, even Lincoln Donuts. For us, though, there is only one real Lincoln, the Lincoln Hotel. We staggered off the bus after 7 hours, but it was worth it because the hotel was so cool. The lobby had a gigantic chandelier, the biggest one I'd ever seen. All of our rooms had cute little balconies. There was a decent game room, good vending machines, and, yes, a big indoor pool, which we immediately dubbed the Emancipation Pool. It was partly the chaperones' fault that the first night was so crazy, because their lights-out time was totally ridiculous. Do they really think we'd go to sleep at 9 o'clock? I was sharing a room with Janice, Hannah, and Beth. We were bouncing from bed to bed, phoning all the other rooms, tossing stuff back and forth to other kids on the balconies. The parent chaperones kept walking up and down the halls and yelling. We'd get into bed and pretend to settle down when they checked our room, but were up again as soon as they were gone. It was crazy fun, but I started to get a little tired. I wanted to read and then go to sleep. Didn't anyone else care about the competition in the morning? I stomped into the bathroom and locked myself in. Janice pounded on the door and convinced me to open up. We sat, her on the edge of the bathtub, me on the closed lid of the toilet. "We're going to be terrible tomorrow if we don't get some sleep," I said. She reached over and patted my shoulder. "We'll be okay. I mean, we've practiced enough, don't you think? Twice a day, before school and after, for the past 3 weeks?" "Yeah," I said, "but you sing better when you're not tired." I guess Janice saw that it wasn't going to be easy to cheer me up, so she took the detachable shower head off the bathtub wall and held it like a microphone. I knew what she had in mind, and my bad mood started to slide away. "We go together," she sang, and then stuck the shower head in front of my face. I couldn't help smiling. Singing always made me feel better. Why do bathrooms have such great acoustics? I put one hand on my ear, miming like I was using headphones in a recording studio. Janice laughed. We kept singing, and halfway through, I realized that the other girls must have heard us too, because they were singing. Janice opened the bathroom door, and the balcony doors were already open, so by the time we started the song again, the girls up and down our hall and the boys one floor above us had all joined in, and everyone clustered on their balconies singing. I listened for Larry's voice, but I couldn't pick it out. He was blending it with everyone else's. The song was really upbeat, but it faded out at the end with lots of repeats. As we sang the ending over and over, people started to sort of fading out themselves in ones and twos, until at last it was all quiet and we went to bed. "See," Janice whispered sleepily into my ear, "I told you we'd be okay." And we were. Better than okay. When we sang in front of the judges, our wahoo yeah was perfect, and Mr. Scott looked so happy, it almost made me laugh. Larry sang even better than usual, his notes clear and pure, and for all three songs I tried to match him. We sounded so good together, I felt like we took the whole chorus with us. And then, honorable mention, which is the same as fourth place. We'd beaten out much bigger choruses from schools that had made the finals for years. We were jumping up and down, screaming, high-fiving each other so much that my hand got sore. I could hardly wait to get home and tell my family and everyone at school all about it. And when Mr. Donaldson, the principal, got the news by phone, he said to have a pizza party that night, his treat. The pizza party was going to be held at the pool. Janice and I changed into our swimsuits. On our way down to the pool, we checked out everyone else, casually of course, and discussed which guys were the hottest. I caught a glimpse of Larry and smiled to myself because I couldn't remember ever seeing anyone less tan. His chest and arms and legs were so white, and that red hair, it was like he was another species. But I didn't say anything to Janice. She'd have asked if I liked him. Again. The water was swarming with kids. It wasn't just our chorus staying at that hotel. A bunch of other schools were there, too. The noise was truly insane. I could see Janice's lips moving, but I couldn't hear what she was saying. The whole place was steamy and reeked of chlorine. We got our pizza and headed outside to the doors in the big glass wall, to a patio with tables and chairs. We sat on our towels in the grass. It was a lot more peaceful out here. Smelled better, too. We ate and talked about the competition and joked with some of the other kids who came by, especially about the skinny judge, who had sat third from the left and whose eyebrows were so big and hairy they looked like mice nibbling on his forehead. I was chewing on my last bite of crust when the glass doors opened and kids started to pour out from the pool area. More people kept pressing out of the doors behind them. I jumped to my feet and hurried over to the crowd with Janice following me. "What's going on?" someone asked. "What happened?" I added. Everyone around us was dripping wet and shivering and talking at once. A guy with a megaphone, emergency announcement. "Everyone out of the pool!" Couldn't even get my towel. "Go to the nearest exit!" Couldn't see anything, but I heard a girl screaming. I turned and looked at the glass wall. Kids were lined up along its whole length, their faces pressed against the glass. But it was completely fogged, and we couldn't see a thing. Then the man with the megaphone came out. "All students, please return to your rooms," he blared. I didn't know who he was, maybe a hotel employee or someone from another school. "Do not go through the pool area. Go around the front of the hotel. This is an emergency. Go to your rooms and stay there until further notice." Everyone started moving toward the front of the hotel. My stomach was cold, like I'd just eaten a mozzarella-covered lump of stone. Rumors flew around, crashing into each other madly. Maybe someone got kidnapped. Maybe there's a serial killer on the loose. Maybe there was too much chlorine in the pool. My cousin got chlorine poisoning once. By the time we got to the elevators, a few kids were already joking about it. "Probably nothing," I heard Jason say. "Just a kid getting sick from too much pizza and a chaperone freaking out about it." I didn't know what to think. We waited for ages for our turn on the elevator, and when we got to our room, Hannah and Beth were already there. We called practically everyone else's room, but still couldn't figure out what was happening. A knock on the door. It was Mrs. Coffey, one of the chaperones. She asked us to go down to her room at the end of the hall. All 18 of us girls crowded into her room, and Mrs. Coffey closed the door. "Girls, I'm sorry to have to tell you this. There's been an accident. Apparently Larry Harris dove off the diving board and hit his head on the bottom of the pool." Gasps. My heart slowed down. No, not just my heart, everything. My thoughts came in slow motion. They must have taken him to the hospital. No, wait. They would have done CPR at the pool first. The lifeguard would know CPR, right? And after that, they took him to the hospital. Mrs. Coffey stood next to Hannah. She put her hand on Hannah's shoulder. "Girls, I'm so sorry. No one noticed what happened. There were too many kids, too much noise. By the time they got him up, by the time someone had noticed, it was too late. He was already gone." "Gone? No way. I just saw him. On our way to the pool, and after that, while we were eating pizza in the lobby, waiting for the elevators, didn't I see him again? Wasn't he there in the crowd somewhere?" Some girls started crying. That annoyed me for some reason. And I was also annoyed at my stomach, which was still hurting. "We're cutting our trip short," Mrs. Coffey said. "As you know, we're supposed to tour Springfield tomorrow, but plans have changed. The bus will be leaving in an hour, and we're going to drive all night to get you home. Please go back to your rooms and pack up and be in the lobby before 8 o'clock. The ride home was almost completely silent. Most of the kids slept. Janice and I leaned on each other but didn't talk. I stared at the seat in front of me, hating myself because I'd never told Larry how much I liked his voice. Why hadn't I? There were a million times I could have said something. Just a few words. You have a great voice. That was all I'd have had to say, but I didn't, and now I'd never have another chance. The bus pulled into the school parking lot in the dead of night, and everyone's parents were there, and everyone was getting hugged and hugging back, even the boys. Mr. Donaldson was there too, and he asked us all to gather around. We stood in a circle. My mom held my hand, and my dad put his arm around my shoulders. Mr. Donaldson said he was proud of us for the way we behaved during this tragedy. He asked for a moment of silence, and we all bowed our heads. My tears were hot in my eyes, warm on my cheeks, and cold when they got down to my chin. My nose started to run, and I didn't know whether to wipe it or stand still respectfully. Then someone started to sing. Amazing Grace. It was Sandra. She sang the first line by herself. Then people started joining in, a few at a time. It was almost impossible to cry and sing at the same time, so I had to stop crying. We sounded a little shaky at first, but we finished together strong, the song filling up the chilly darkness. We had school the next day, which seemed so weird, like the world should have changed in some huge way, but it hadn't. The kids in chorus got a lot of attention. Everyone wanted to know where we were, what we saw, and I was proud that none of us said we saw it happen because we hadn't, and some things are too big to lie about. A couple of days later, the school had held a memorial assembly for Larry. Mr. Donaldson walked up to the mic with two other people, and we knew right away who they were. Mr. Donaldson told us that Mr. Harris wanted to say a few words. Mr. Harris stepped forward, big and beefy, red hair like Larry's. Mrs. Harris stood next to him, her head down. "My wife and I want to thank you all for being friends with Larry," Mr. Harris said. "He loved this school, and he especially loved singing in the chorus. We're glad he was with his friends when... He stopped, took off his glasses, rubbed his eyes, put the glasses back on again. I wondered what happened to Larry's glasses. Mr. Harris cleared his throat and went on. "We're proud that he was with you at State, proud that he was a part of that honorable mention." He tried to say something more, but finally shook his head and stepped back. Mrs. Harris looked up for just a moment, and I had to put my hand to my mouth to stop from crying out when I saw her face, all hollows and shadows. The select chorus sang For the Beauty of the Earth, another one of our competition songs. Chorus was officially finished for the year, so we hadn't sung together since our trip. We probably sounded fine to everyone else. But there was a voice missing in my right ear, and behind my right shoulder, an empty, boy-shaped space. I'd never known anyone my age who'd died before. I imagined Larry doing a nice dive. It would have been a good one for him to go so deep and hit so hard, and that he never felt a thing, no pain, nothing. But would he have rather known that he was going to die? I didn't want to think of him being scared or hurting, but maybe it could have been like a dream, so he could have thought about his family or said a little prayer. I heard some of the kids talking about how they were really tight with Larry, great friends, best buds, when I knew they barely knew him. I hated that because I couldn't decide if he was my friend. I didn't want to act like he was if it wasn't true. Was he a friend, or just a guy I knew, or maybe even someone I'd started to like a tiny bit? Larry had ridden the same bus as me. His locker was down the hall from mine, but we'd never hung out before. It was like he'd been in my peripheral vision a lot of the time, but hardly ever in my direct line of sight. Except in chorus, of course, when I couldn't see him at all unless I turned around. I remembered his beautiful voice helping me sing better. I remember how weird he looked in his swimsuit, but almost cute at the same time. If you had memories of someone, good memories, did that make them a friend? Sometimes I felt so bad, I thought it meant he was definitely my friend. Or was I a fake for feeling that way? Because hours could go by when I didn't think about him at all. For the funeral, they dressed him in his chorus uniform, white pants, navy blue shirt, red tie. He was wearing his glasses. I was glad, because I'd never seen him without them. He looked dignified, not goofy. When we went forward to pay our respects, it was weird, the little things I noticed. Makeup was caked on his face, so thick it looked like mud, except it was totally fake pinky beige color. It was really awful. Why did they have to do that? Then I saw his hands folded over his chest. His nails were manicured. So creepy. I sat down again, shaking in my stomach and my knees. Music was playing softly, not funeral music, but a recording of us at State. I sang along in my head and started to feel a little calmer. Maybe it was impossible to cry and sing at the same time, even if you're only singing inside your head. I listened hard, but I couldn't pick out Larry's voice. He'd have liked that. Thank you for listening to Short Stories of Mrs. Sam. I think it's interesting to compare what the author's inspiration was for her short story and what details she kept in and took from real life and what details she made up. I hope you join us next week. Short Stories with Mrs. Sam is brought to you by Hotchkiss Library of Sharon and Robin Hood Radio. All sounds in this recording are from freesound.org.